Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just 15 bucks a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Oh, by the way, I've got S.C. Gwynne's new book.
Did you forget my bottle?
I filled it up, but I forgot to bring it in. Sorry, Andy. I've got S.C. Gwynne's new book.
I know, you WhatsApped me.
Yeah, it's great.
Have you already started it?
I've read the kind of the first couple of pages. It's all about the final year of the U.S. Civil War.
Okay.
Yeah, he's the GOAT, man. Have you read Rebel Yell?
Yeah, no. I've got it. I haven't started it yet.
You got me onto Empire of the Summer Moon, which
Empire
is brilliant.
Of the Summer Moon is.
Rebel Yell is all about Stonewall Jackson. He's a fascinating character, like a really interesting. It's so exhaustive as well.
Yeah.
The research
but
is unbelievable.
It never feels like, oh, Jesus.
It's not heavy, exactly.
Yeah.
James, there's a new manager at Genoa. It's the treble winning, much decorated, powerful. Very powerful Thiago Motta.
Great beard.
Lovely beard. I was a bit confused. The Evening Standard ran something this week saying that Thiago Motta has played down suggestions he will throw convention out of the window and field an adventurous new formation, right? And they list it as a 2-7-2, which would be weird because they're actually listing the goalkeeper in the formation now.
Well, I mean, and he definitely insisted on that because it was put to him. It's like, what, Thiago? That's 11 players. And he was like, well, yeah, I include the goalkeeper as a participant in our play.
Guardiola is fuming he hasn't thought of that first. He is absolutely beside himself.
The thing is,
he's on the phone to Motta now.
Motta got ridiculed when he came out with this, and this is going back, I think, a year, 18 months. I think it was in the interview with La Gazzetta dello Sport. And the reality is he's talking about when his team has possession.
Right.
Yeah, he's not talking about starting with just, you know, two centre-backs.
Yeah.
So
Can you, before we get into that, before we do a deep dive on this, just very quickly, because we had a few emails about the situation here, Mark and Adam and several others emailed in at otc@footballroundwithdaily.com. So just give us a very, very short précis of the situation that led to him becoming the boss of Genoa.
So Aurelio Andreazzoli, who'd got the Genoa job in the summer after taking Empoli down, that is a harsh reading of it because ultimately Empoli sacked him. They should never have sacked him. They brought him back. Empoli went on a tear. They almost stayed up. Remember, there was that incredible game at the end of last season when Empoli went to San Siro to play Inter and they had Inter on the ropes and it looked like Inter weren't going to qualify for the Champions League, and then Na England scored in the final 15 minutes and they eventually got got through, and Empoli ended up going down. Andrea Azzoli plays really good, exciting football. He's good at developing young players. That is something that Genoa need. It's something that a lot of clubs outside the top six need if they're going to survive without Champions League football, without owning their own stadium. They need to make money from buying low and selling high and have coaches who develop players. They started the season really well. They played against Roma at the Olimpico. They came back three times. They drew 3-3. They beat Fiorentina in their second game, playing excellent football. But as with Andreazzoli's Empoli, they would often play really, really well, create a lot of chances, not take them, and end up losing games that they deserve to get something from. Mm. And so Andreazzoli was already at risk of getting the sack before the last international break. The players pushed back on that. So the club basically decided, okay, we'll give him the next game. They gave him the next game. They lost. They were embarrassed by Parma. Andres Cornelius, remember?
Yeah.
Cardiff City legend.
Yeah. Yeah.
He scored a hat trick. And
I mean, that is coffin nail stuff, that.
Exactly. <isn't> it? So it's then that they do this, then they call, they use this term in Italy, and it's an English term. They say they have a casting
right.
couch, where they basically go and talk to lots of different
Not
managers.
One of those ones in the videos you watch.
The videos you watch, because you're clearly aware of those videos, Luke. And the funny thing is how Genoa works, is that this is a hire and fire club. They're quite happy to go through three managers as long as they stay up. They did it last season, and it looked like they were going to do it again this season. And they basically got Francesco Guidolin. Do you remember him?
Yeah, of course.
He used to be
yeah.
at Swansea. Did really well with Vicenza.
A lot of Welsh connections here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. With Vicenza, more recently Udinese. And they had an arrangement with him. And then they were like, you know what? I'm just going to talk to a few other guys. And they went to talk to Massimo Carrera, who won the league at Spartak. He used to be on Antonio Conte's staff. And they're like, oh, actually, I really like Carrera. And then they're like, actually, I'm going to have dinner with Thiago Motta because he's over in Italy at the moment for a coaching course at Coverciano. Let's go and see Motta. He used to play for us. He's been doing some interesting stuff with the under-19s. And I've heard about this 2-7-2 formation. And they go and they go and appoint Thiago Motta. And this is one of the risks that Enrico Preziosi, their general president, is prepared to take. Give an opportunity to either bright young players who haven't had opportunities in the past and do it with managers as well. And I must say, Motta, first impressions, he's done very well. Last weekend was his debut against Brescia, and they came back from behind to win 3-1. And this was the first time in Italian football history that a manager has made three changes, three substitutions in the second half, and each one of those substitutes scored a goal.
Yeah, but they haven't had three substitutes for that many years, have they?
That's true, but even when...
Because Arrigo Sacchi would have definitely done that at some point.
It was still something that's never happened before.
Yeah. So just before we get into that in huge depth, this is the third sacking in Serie A, I think in 15 days, after Di Francesco left Sampdoria, Gianpaolo left Milan, and now Andreazzoli's left Genoa. Mm. Does it feel like there could have been more? It feels to me like there could have been more.
We're in sacking season, because...
How do you expect this to continue?
Oh, absolutely.
Casual watchers of Serie A will be going, this is pretty crazy, right?
Yeah, although it's nothing unusual to your seasoned Serie A watcher. Mm. I would say that this weekend could be big in terms of heads rolling, because... Mm. Igor Tudor, the coach of Udinese, who's already been sacked by Udinese in the past.
Last season, there were 12. There were 12 in total.
Right. Yeah. He is under fire because last weekend, they went into the match day with the best defence in the league. They then conceded 7 to an Atalanta side that had conceded 5 to Man City. Mm-hmm. That was mitigated by the fact that they went down to 10 men after half an hour. They then play Roma at home on Wednesday night. Roma have a man sent off, wrongly.
That was a dreadful decision.
That was a joke. And they then concede 3 goals to 10-man Roma in a 4-0 defeat. Mm. So Tudor is under real pressure. Mm-hmm. And the only reason why they haven't intervened is because, well, there's another match coming very, very soon. And I'd say it's unfair to give a new manager the job when basically he has to work on a game plan so quickly, as well as going through all the formalities of getting your paperwork done and... Yeah, doing the media and then eventually training the team for a game against Genoa at the weekend.
So what do we expect from Motta at Genoa then?
Well, this is a curious thing about this group of players at Genoa, is that they tend to start well under new managers. I mean, they're used to having new managers all the time. They had three last year. They're already onto their second this year. And they play well because they've got talent. And we saw that against Brescia at the weekend. We even saw it in the defeat to Juventus on Wednesday night. And Motta is clearly a very bold manager, who's willing to experiment. I mean, in the first game against Brescia, he started with what was nominally a kind of 3-5-2. What was different about that was that Radovanovic, who's played in midfield his entire career, is all of a sudden playing as a centre-back and is a very fluid kind of position as well, because he was stepping into the midfield and staying in midfield when they had the ball. He made the changes, as I mentioned, final 20 minutes. They changed system three or four times in that game, 4-2-3-1, 4-4-2 diamond, straight 4-4-2. And they just kept going and going and going. And it was clear that Brescia, pity them, had no idea what was going on, because it was like all of a sudden I was supposed to be picking up this guy. Now he's moved. And it's one of those games where if Genoa don't win that game, then a reaction that we'd be justified in having is like, what is Motta doing? He's just fiddling around all over the place. He's very confused here. Second game against Juventus, he basically starts with the team that finished the game against Brescia. 4-2-3-1, very attacking, with Pinamonte, Kouame, Agudelo, who had never had a look in under Andreazzoli and has now become this really promising player. You look at him and you think, how has this guy not been starting? He's made an instant impact. And Pandev.
Agudelo is the creative midfield player, right?
So Agudelo is this young Colombian that they signed in the summer. No minutes until last weekend when he came on and helped change the game against Brescia. And even when Genoa were down 10 men, for what, 30 minutes in the second half of this game in Turin against Juventus.
And then nine men after that, wasn't it?
No, Juventus then had a man sent off.
Rabiot went off. That's right. I thought there was another red card, but it might have been a player who was on the bench at the time.
Marchetti, the goalkeeper, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
But poor Adrian Rabiot, who came on and then picked up two yellow cards and was sent off. I mean,
will his mum say?
His Juventus career.
She'll have words with the referee. There's no doubt about it.
His Juventus career has not got off to the best start. Let's put it like that. I think ultimately Genoa felt hard done by last night because they had a man harshly sent off, Casata, second yellow card, which was really, really harsh. And then they have a penalty given against them in the 94th minute, which is borderline, I would say. Juventus had just had a goal disallowed for offside. It didn't look like it was going to be their night.
Did it remind you of the Luciano Moggi days, James?
Well, I mean, we'll get to what happened in the Napoli-Atalanta game in a minute, because Napoli felt, well, actually, just let's go straight into it. Because what happened at the end of that game was Napoli felt that they should have had a penalty. It's 2-2 at that time. Fernando Llorente is essentially taken out. If you've ever seen American football,
it's a rugby tackle by Simon Kjær.
It's kind of like,
it's like what Guendouzi did.
Pass interference.
Yeah, for those who've seen that.
In an NFL game where the cornerback takes out the wide receiver.
Yeah.
And it does go to a check by the video assistant referee. And the assistant referee judges that Llorente has kind of elbowed Kjær before Kjær rugby tackles him, as Andy says. But before that check is going on, or while that check is going on, Atalanta go up the other end and score an equaliser. And all hell breaks loose because Napoli want the referee to be basically told by the video assistant referee to go and review it, go to the monitor. It doesn't happen. The video assistant referee basically validates the decision that was made on the pitch. And you see Insigne get booked for dissent. You see one of Ancelotti's staff get sent off. Then Ancelotti himself gets sent off. And he, after the game, was like, this is a disgrace. Because all I said to the referee, there was an exchange between him and the referee where the ref says, can you help me get back control here? And he says, well, just wait a second. Do you not have any doubts that that might have been a penalty? And the referee just pulls his red card out and sends him into the stands.
Wow, sure sign of being in control.
And then Napoli kind of lose their heads. I mean, you hear the atmosphere in the stadium. I wouldn't want to be one of the match officials, or in fact, one of the Atalanta players. I mean, they would probably need security to get
right,
out.
Right, well, it was right. It was a game in which Napoli played some really, really good football, but in the end, they could have easily ended up losing because, as you say, their heads went after that.
They lost their heads. Ilicic had a chance to win it in stoppage time.
Milik had a few chances, didn't he?
Well, this is the thing.
Hit the post.
Napoli, and this has been the story of their season, is that they create and create and create, but they don't take their chances. And Milik hit the post, he hit the bar.
That's right, yeah.
There were a couple of one-on-ones, for example, with Callejon and Fabian Ruiz. Golini pulls off saves. And ultimately, the game is still open. And unless you kill Atalanta in the way that Man City did...
Yeah, they're like Joe Pesci in Casino, aren't they? They keep coming back.
They will keep coming back. And, you know, after the game... The president of Napoli, Aurelio De Laurentiis, says nothing's changed since 2005, by which he's inferring that Calciopoli is still a thing. I mean, Napoli would have to still be in the title race for that to be an issue, I would say. And I think it's not an issue anymore because the infrastructure that was there has been removed. Also, you'd have to look at, for example, what happened to Atalanta a couple of weeks ago when they were playing Lazio and they had... what, in their opinion, were two very dubious penalties given against them. Ultimately, video assistant referee, a referee, humans are still making these decisions.
Yeah.
You can give them all the technology that they need. You can show them all the replays that you want. But ultimately, their decision is final and they're human beings and they make mistakes.
Yeah.
And that is what I feel happened in this game, even though I can kind of see why that penalty wasn't given and instead a free kick was given to Atalanta instead. But De Laurentiis, you know, really popping off, basically saying, you know, if there wasn't football, which, you know, we owners put money into making the spectacle it is because we pay for these players, it's an entertainment industry, referees wouldn't have a job if this entertainment industry didn't exist, they would be back home peeling potatoes, is his quote.
Love it. Love it. He'll get a fine for that, will he, I expect?
I imagine so, yeah.
That was a very comprehensive roundup, James. But before we move on from Italy, I want to ask both of you, in fact, just to give me a comment on Fiorentina's Franck Ribéry, who has been banned for 3 matches and fined €20,000 because he pushed an assistant referee in Fiorentina's 2-1 defeat by Lazio.
Well, he'd been so impeccably behaved so far.
We thought he was setting an example over there.
But you know, you don't think of Ribéry habitually as a charmer, do you? But he's charmed Florence from the moment he got off the plane onto the tarmac. It couldn't last forever, could it?
No.
Although, I should say he has apologised.
But and we have to say, I think the issue is less the trouble he's got into and the ban he's got into for the contretemps with a match official.
Yeah.
It was more the fact that he lost his shit with Montella for getting taken off in the first place.
Yeah.
That's the internal issue, isn't it?
Little message for Granit Xhaka. If you're going to do it properly.
It is. But ultimately, the reason why he pushed the linesman, Luke, is because after the game, which had been decided, well, it hadn't really been decided because ultimately Lazio were already in the lead, but there was a penalty given against Fiorentina in stoppage time. It was a chance for Lazio to go 3-1 up.
Yeah, it went on for ages with VAR, didn't it?
It went on for ages, and Ribéry felt it should never have been a penalty, so he comes on to the pitch at the end of the game and basically is remonstrating with the officials and at one stage pushes the linesman. But Andy's right. I mean, this was one of the peculiarities of that performance is that Ribéry is substituted in part because they've got a midweek round of games coming up and he's with Federico Chiesa, their most important player. I mean, I think he's the oldest player in Europe's top 5 leagues to have at least 2 goals and 2 assists. He's already been named player of the month. I think it was in August. He's made a real impact and he set up Chiesa's goal in that Lazio game. Montella takes him off. He's shaking his head. He basically then goes to sit down in the dugout. He then stands up and he's like, why have you substituted me? And Montella, after the game, was saying, oh, he was upset because I didn't substitute him earlier. This is the thing with Montella. He's a gag man.
Yeah.
So like, even after the win
does
against...
Does he do impressions as well? Or just,
no,
just
yeah, well,
does an aeroplane?
He probably
aeroplane.
Does. Yeah, he does a really good aeroplane.
Yeah.
Who's his Chris Finch? That's the question.
But after the Sassuolo game, which Fiorentina came back from behind to win without Ribéry, with Ribéry in the stands sat next to Vincenzo Montella. Montella was asked, he's like, that was a great display, Vincenzo. How do you explain your, you know, the tactics I use? Well, I had Ribéry by my side. He basically advised me what changes I need to make.
Did he really?
What substitutes I had to do.
He's salty. He is salty, isn't he?
He's good. So, yeah, I mean, Ribéry's out for three games, but, well, two now, and but they look just fine without him at the moment.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, OTCers. Pete here from the Football Ramble. Now, are you in Norwich or Ipswich or anywhere near the rump of these gorgeous isles? Get yourself a ticket tonight for Ramble Live in Norwich, Thursday the 31st. It's going to be loads of fun. That's ramblelive.com.
Andy, I want to come to you and talk about... I want to come to both of you. I always want to come to both of you. I don't like the idea of we siloing off different subjects. I want
silo,
to...
that was a great level in GoldenEye.
It was, actually.
Remember?
Yes, I do. Brilliant. The hardest level in GoldenEye was Control.
Yeah.
Where you had to go and do that thing on the computer and all these guards came down. You had to keep shooting them while doing it.
Yeah. Also because I think the video game technology at that time, it didn't understand that I was doing the kind of computer bit that you needed to do. And it would basically say, "No, you're not using the right controls here. You haven't pressed the right button." And he's like, "No, I'm being." That would really stress me out. That game. They need to bring it back, though. I mean,
yeah, I agree.
I was really upset.
Prime for a reboot.
I was upset with my father this summer because he was having a summer clear out.
Yeah.
He basically got rid of my N64 and GoldenEye.
That's unforgivable.
It's unforgivable.
I know your dad. He's a lovely man, but that is unforgivable.
Yeah.
Did you ever make it to 00 agent level? Because it was agent, secret agent, 00 agent. 00 agent was the toughest level. If you completed the whole thing on 00, you got respect from me, I'm telling you.
I mean, I could blag and say yes, but I honestly can't remember.
We'll have a GoldenEye.
I imagine I would remember if I'd achieved something like that, because it'd be the greatest achievement of my life.
The worst thing I've ever lost in a clear out, my 110 goals Italia style VHS from, I guess they would have been 88, 89 and 89, 90, which was the first thing that got me into Italian football.
I'm giving away a VHS pretty much every live show at the moment to people.
Well, I've got nothing left to watch on it, so I don't want it.
Yeah. RambleLive.com to get tickets. Come along, play a game, win a VHS videotape.
Nice.
It's just one of the reasons to come along. But at some point in the deep, distant past, we were talking about potentially the next James Bond, Patrick Vieira. That's who I want to talk about now.
Yes.
I can't even remember if I said his name or not, but I've said it now. He's currently the coach of Nice. They've lost three games in a row in Ligue 1, but partly fueled by Ramble Meets alumnus Nigel Winterburn, there's talk that he might be being lined up to replace one Unai Emery at Arsenal.
Too soon.
Okay.
Too soon.
That's your take, is it?
Yeah, it is. And I think Vieira has done a really, really good job at Nice so far. It's a very different job this season, which is why he's in a bit of a sticky situation at the moment. I mean, they're in the bottom six in Ligue 1. They've lost four out of the last five in the league. And last night, as we're recording, they went out of the Coupe de la Ligue to Le Mans, who are bottom three in Ligue 2 at the moment. I mean, they went to the wall and they're on the way back. So for them, like bottom three in Ligue 2 is not that bad at all, even though we remember them in the top flight in recent memory.
And we also remember them for their excellent 24-hour driving car race.
Mm. Yeah, it's not the players that do that.
No. Right. I don't think. The fact that I've just said the words driving car race will tell you everything you need to know about what I know about motorsport. But that's a poor result for them, even though it's away from home, isn't
it?
Yeah,
and Vieira, for the first time, stepped away from his players and just he said that performance was. I'm not going to protect them. He said that performance was completely unacceptable for an ambitious team, for an ambitious club.
So why are Arsenal interested? Why are Arsenal sniffing around?
Well, he has done a really good job since he was there. I mean, transitional doesn't quite describe where their squad was last season. They didn't go out and get any forward players, so they were going along at way less than a goal a game last season. They were making Nantes look prolific through a lot of last season.
They're third bottom for chances created at the moment in Ligue 1.
Yeah, I mean, now it's not a problem with the forward players they've got. It's a problem in terms of trying to commute from a totally different style, because they were really defensively efficient last season. Because to go along at way less than a goal a game and get yourself comfortably in the top 10, I think is a really incredible effort. You know, you look at the players they'd lost over the last couple of years, they never really replaced Balotelli. Vieira had his issues with Saint-Maximin. And, you know, they lost others as well. Atom Ben Arfa, John Michael Seri, Wesley Snyder before that never really clicked
Schneider.
For them.
I've forgotten about that.
I know.
Are they regretting not taking that 500 million quid from Barcelona for Seri? Because that is some fall from grace from Seri, isn't it?
They did all right in terms of what they got back from Fulham in the end.
And Casper Dolgo scored a couple though, hasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. They've got him in. They've
and
got,
his watch stolen, of course.
They've got Adam Unas.
Yes.
They've got Alexis Claude-Maurice, who Arsenal were very, very interested in, goal-scoring midfielder.
They've got the excellently named Patrick Berner as well.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. But basically, those three that I was just mentioning, they were lined up for a long time, and it took a long time to get them over the line because they were waiting for the Ineos takeover to be completed. So, you know, Jim Ratcliffe was talking. He's not interviewed often, but he was interviewed in L'Équipe last week, and he was saying, you know, the summer transfer window wasn't really what we wanted. It wasn't really the extent that we hoped for because we couldn't get the deal over the line quick enough. So, like, their aim is to qualify for the Champions League again and again. And if there was a season in which you were going to do it, you look at the way that Lyon, Marseille, Monaco have started, and you think this could be it. I mean, Lille being back in the top three when they've had a bit of a difficult start and they've lost some players is quite remarkable, really. But I think for Vieira, it is difficult because you have got a club that's ambitious, that's got a great stadium, a great new training ground. It shouldn't be difficult to attract players there because it's a wonderful part of the world, of course. But he is trying to commute from a team that basically keeps itself in games to something a little bit more expressive. And he's done it with half a transfer window. He's doing it with trying to settle a load of new players in. The team looks a little bit clunky and disjointed.
But is there a feeling, Andy, that because they've got this takeover and by wealthy owners and they're trying to usher in a new era, does Patrick Vieira perhaps have a feeling that they're going to bring in a new coach, super coach, and
he doesn't, because they've been very clear all the time along that they wanted him. Now, Jim Ratcliffe may have bought the club, but he's not running the club himself. He brought back Hubert Fournier, the sporting director, and Jean-Pierre Rivère, the previous president, who'd originally sold half his stake to Chinese investors before cashing out completely. Now, Vieira was really annoyed with Fournier and Rivère because he felt that they left him in a sort of invidious position last year when they sold out. to the previous owners, because basically they'd brought him in and then left him holding the baby. So he had something written with the previous owners into his last contract that said if Fournier and Rivière came back at any point, he could quit with no compensation due or anything like that. He could just tear up his contract on the spot. Now, Jim Ratcliffe has talked him out of that because he wants him to stay.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got his brother running the club. And they feel that they've got the right man there in Vieira, a coach who's a coach who has never lent on his playing past, which I think is very impressive. And he's been at pains to stress that all the way along. He's aware that he's not the finished article. He's keen to learn. He's keen to listen. He's keen to collaborate. But he is a genuinely strong leader. I think there's a lot to like about what Vieira's done. But there's also an understanding at the club that it is a difficult time. What Vieira has done, and maybe this Le Mans defeat will do them good in the long run, him coming out and really saying to the players, I know there's been a lot of change at the club, but you're using it as an excuse. And it's not good enough. I mean, Adrien Tamés, who came off in that game and had a little bit of a strop on the sideline. I mean, he said, well, I would have liked it if he was that angry on the pitch, because right. You know, Vieira's like not happy with what his team's putting in at the moment. But in terms going back right to the beginning, linking him to the Arsenal job.
2 points off the relegation places. I do.
Who, Nick?
Patrick Vieira, yeah.
He's,
yeah, that's the thing.
I don't really think that's
but that's we the saw issue this in the past, Ronnie. We've seen you were adamant. I don't want to kind of after time you and sort of stick the boot in, but you're very rarely wrong. So it's almost irresistible to do so. A few years ago, you were telling me you were swearing blind that André Villas-Boas was not going to leave and go to Chelsea. But inevitably, he found out that it was too big of an opportunity to turn down. Is Patrick Vieira realistically going to be able to resist those heartstrings? And if they come in for him, say, no, it's not for me, it's too early.
I don't think it is about heartstrings, because like a lot of other
Patrick
players,
and the heartstrings.
A lot of other players who former players who could have been kept in the loop by Arsene Wenger, they were kind of cut off.
So was Tony Adams, disgrace.
And well, Thierry Henry's part of that to an extent as well. And I think a lot of that golden generation for Arsenal that, you know, they would have liked to lean on their experiences and their qualities as much as, say, Bayern have done, trying to keep former players as part of the club. I think Arsene Wenger cut off a lot of that and almost made a lot of that goodwill disappear. Mm. Whether that's something that could be put in the past, I think, is a different question. Now, I'm not saying Vieira to Arsenal is totally impossible. What I'm saying is it is a bad idea at this point in time, because they need someone experienced, established, who can lead from the front, not just a figurehead to please the fans. He's still learning the job, and he's like self-consciously still learning the job, and he's going through a totally different experience at the moment, which I think is going to land him in good stead. If he gets them to a point where, say, halfway through next season, they're challenging for a Champions League place, I think then it's time to have that conversation about him moving on.
I mean, I'll just finish up by saying...
Like I said, what you were saying about Villas-Boas, just because it's not a good idea doesn't mean it won't happen.
I was going to say, and thinking about it when you said a bad idea there, I don't know about you, James, but I was thinking the implementation consistently of bad ideas in football is probably the main reason I like it. I mean, it's the main reason I'm watching it.
You are right. I mean, I know a number of people who work in analytics who've either got involved in football at one stage or another and then have kind of come back out of it.
So because it's crazy, yeah.
Because they say it's crazy in terms of you want to apply logic, you want to apply these data methods which are supposed to make you smarter, at least in recruitment. They might not make you win as many games as you think you are, but they will make you better. And in terms of just finding people receptive to those ideas, willing to take them on board, yeah, they found it very challenging, very difficult, and have become quite disillusioned and have essentially left the industry.
The thing is, similar things happen in politics as well. Now.
If you work in that kind of job, as long as you can cope with the fact that you're not going to be listened to 85% of the time, you'll find it. I think to survive in it is probably a little bit like parenthood. That one time that your child listens to you, you think, oh yeah, they do listen to me.
I have made a difference.
You forget the other 95 times they haven't listened to you.
Yeah. Well, if you go back to, just very, very finally, just to wrap up on this, if you go back to... to Vieira. I mean, the excellent David Ornstein's column this week says that Arsenal aren't considering removing Unai Emery anywhere near soon anyway, so it might all be a moot point at this stage.
And do you know better football than me?
No.
So why are you talking?
I ask you, I do my job.
Are you a journalist or a camera guy?
I am journalist.
So why are you holding the camera? You should have a camera guy,
because
no?
Because my boss wants to meet you.
So he's low budget.
All right, Netherlands. We don't talk about Netherlands anywhere near as much as perhaps we should. I find the Netherlands, or if it's just called Netherlands, I haven't checked, a inherently hilarious nation for a number of different reasons.
Because you can do a good Dutch accent is why, isn't it?
You want a schmuck and a pancake, come see me. But
I've got Dutch godparents, so it would be fine if I did that.
Is that offensive?
I'm not sure if it's fine that you did that.
All right, I apologise to anyone who's listening. But if you're going to tell me, if the news wires are going to come to me and say, Dick Advocaat has replaced Jaap Stam as coach of Feyenoord, I'm bringing that to the bank. And by the bank, I mean Andy Brassel and James Horncastle, because I want to know what kind of interest I can get on that news deposit.
Pretty much like for like, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the confusing thing about it. What is happening?
Well, I mean, obviously there's a lot of interest given that Advocaat will end up coming up against Rangers.
Yes,
in a few short weeks. But Feyenoord are a mess. And my friend Chris Parrott, who I work on Trans Europe Express and a number of other things with, who covers a lot of Dutch football, his belief is that there's quite a deep malaise in Feyenoord that changing the coach is not going to fix. I think it's quite notable that Stam stepped down rather than was given the push. I think if the club was in better shape, Stam gets the push rather than actually leaves. And of course, there might be a degree of mutual consent. They didn't try and make him stay. A lot of people thought he was an unusual appointment when he was first made in the first place. But they've really struggled to build on winning the league a couple of years back. I mean, on the pitch, it seemed as if the stuffing was knocked out of them by going into the Champions League and taking a few beatings from, well, teams with a lot more money than them, who are a lot better than them. They lost a few big players, of course, on the back of that championship run as well. And really, all that's kept them in sort of semi-relevance in the last little while was the Robin van Persie farewell tour, following the back of the Dirk Kuyt farewell tour. I mean, anyone can get beaten 4-0 at Ajax. And I think it's really interesting what's happened, as you were saying when we were talking about this before we came in the studio, Luke, the fact that all of a sudden this gap has completely opened up between Ajax and PSV. And I think you go back to last weekend when PSV were absolutely hammered at home by AZ. And AZ have got good players, led by Calvin Stengs. And they're really interesting to watch. But, yeah. And you know, people look at that as well and say, well, they went down to 10 men relatively early on. They didn't have a shot on target at home against AZ. Yeah. I mean, that is so far from good enough at the moment. But
they were locked on. They were locked on the same points for a long time, and then PSV went through this two terrible. Then they lose to Utrecht after that as well.
That's right. And they're in a bad place at the moment. I mean, I understand it's the first genuine wall that Van Bommel has hit since he's been there, because the league was very, very close last season, and there's no shame in losing to a team like Ajax season. There's no shame losing to a team like Ajax have this season. But Van Bommel's trying to think of a way around it, because he's still a pretty inexperienced head coach. And he's said, well, okay, why don't we step back from it? Why don't we have an extra day off here and there just to absorb what happened and try and deal with it. But I think it's really interesting to see how he tries to get through this. At the moment, the best chance of them overtaking Ajax, Erik ten Hag is being linked more and more with the Bayern job at the moment, with his history there. And because there aren't really a lot of obvious candidates, and that's probably why Niko Kovac is still in the job, really, because there's not a lot of obvious succession candidates. But with ten Hag's connection with Bayern, with the fact that Ajax, I mean, and this is the wide perception, I think, that they've lost a couple of really big players and they've gone on to still be really good this season. I mean, I think realistically, when you look at the Champions League money they made, when you look at the money they made off De Ligt and De Jong, they should be set for the next couple of years in the Eredivisie if they play it right.
That's
it does mean that there's a lot of people looking at Erik ten Hag and thinking, oh, actually, maybe we didn't give him enough credit. I think that's the wider perception.
But that's a whistle-stop tour of the Netherlands, and we thank you for it. But dragging it back to Jaap Stam very, very quickly, I wonder if you've got any opinion, and maybe you don't, and it's too early to say, and that's fine. If you guys have got an opinion on the type of coach...
Is it too soon for him to get the Man United job? Well, is that what you're about to say?
I don't think it's too soon for anyone to get the Man United job. I think I could find you people on the street outside, but it wouldn't be too soon for them to get that job. But Jaap Stam had a couple of years at Reading. The first season he was there, I think it was the first season, they got to the playoffs, and they were excellent. They were on a terrible run in his second season in charge. I think they lost a couple of players, a couple of important players as well. If my memory serves me correct, they won 1-18 and he left by mutual consent. Then he goes to Zvola. And he doesn't really get much time at Zvola because he does quite well.
Hard to swallow.
Yeah, it was very hard to swallow the fact that he left for final because they came in for him. And he's not going to turn that down, right? So he went to final. Now he finds himself a 47-year-old, fairly young coach still, without a job. And I wonder if he's actually... because his win percentage record is actually quite good. I wonder if he's a bit of an underrated coach at this point.
You see, when you started that off, I heard just two words, really. Marcus Babbel.
Right.
Because
I thought you were going to say Ryan Babbel.
Yeah.
So, like, is he coaching already?
We'll be talking about him in 5 years' time. I think you look at Marcus Babbel, who started off really well at Stuttgart. Now, I think this isn't...
That's right, he did.
It's an underrated... And then, Stuttgart. Before you know it, he's turning down the Millwall job and just, you know, disappearing off our radars. He is still coaching, went to Australia after that. But I think it's fair to say that his coaching career, which looked like it could be very promising at the beginning, didn't quite go as he wanted. And I think you could say that about a lot of coaches, young coaches. People look at them and it's how they recover from their first setback. Again, Andre Villas-Boas, you could argue, couldn't you? He's got nowhere near what was expected of him
in the Dakar Rally
when he was at Porto.
yeah,
didn't even finish.
But, I mean, obviously, AVB's at Marseille now, isn't he?
Yeah, but, I mean, he's not had a terrible career,
no.
But slightly underwhelming.
Well, I think that's exactly why what the job that Jaap Stam takes next is really important.
Yeah,
because he needs to get into a club which is big enough for him to actually do something.
But coaching is all about making the right choice at the right
absolutely.
Time, isn't it?
Absolutely. 100%.
I'm sure he'll get
couple
another job.
A couple of bad choices
he'll
in a row.
He'll intimidate someone into giving it.
No, the vein will intimidate people into doing
it. Well, you could see Man United going for a huge name next and then going, oh, that's not worth it. Let's get one of the old boys back.
Oh, come on, Yap.
Yap and Yaps and Yaps chaps are playing at United. All right, let's turn our attention to Spain. Andy, you are very... thank you. You are very passionate about talking about the comparisons between, or perhaps even the contrasts between Atletico Madrid and Diego Simeone and Sevilla and Julen Lopetegui. But before we do that, can you please give me a line or two on Granada, who spent a bit of time top of La Liga this week before Real Madrid and Barcelona both won their games in hand. What's Diego Martinez brought to this team? And how much can we give credit to Tony Adams for it? If you can answer all that in like two sentences, that'd be brilliant.
Well, by the time people listen to this, Granada might be back on top.
Oh, because they play tonight, don't they?
Win Thursday night's game against Getafe, which will be a tough one. But it's an absolutely extraordinary story.
It's the hottest subject in the email box this week.
Really?
OTC at footballramaday.com.
Well, you talked about Tony Adams. I mean, the notable thing with that win against Betis last week is that they matched the 20 points that they got the last time they were in
total.
Flight in 16-17.
That's right, yeah.
Tony Adams may or may not have had something to do with that.
Did they just play that video of him kind of...
Doing all the hand signals
and saying, this is what could happen if you don't get results.
No, but
we'll bring him back.
I look at that and think, why has he not been on Strictly?
Yeah. Oh, true. There's still time for that. But there was chat that he actually gave a lot of good advice to the owners of Granada at the time. Said, this is what you should do, this is what you shouldn't do. And some people are arguing they've implemented that, and it's set a bit of a foundation for them for this success now. Would you go along with that? Yeah, would you go along with that?
Well, it's taken them a bloody long time to come back up to the top flight, given that there was pressure on them.
But if a butterfly flaps its wings, you know, in 2016-17, is there a hurricane of football in 2019-20?
That is the most flattering kind of comparison that you could make with Tony Adams gesturing. Yeah. He's a butterfly, essentially.
That's what he was doing. You think he was doing some weird trans round drill? He was just flapping his wings. He thought, in 3 or 4 years' time, so we're going to come home to roost.
In terms of there being a plan for them coming up, it's not always been easy to see. It has been... people don't use this word enough now. It seems to have disappeared from the tabloids. It was used a lot in the 1980s. It has been a torrid path back to the top flight.
Yeah.
It wasn't easy. And I think for that reason, you have to give Diego Martinez great credit. And you also have to give him great credit for what's gone in this season, the coach. Because he was someone who was recruited to Sevilla by Monchi, personally. He was an assistant for Unai Emery during the Europa League wins. I didn't say he was behind it all. You said he was behind it all.
Well,
and
is he readier than Tony Adams? Than Patrick Vieira for the Arsenal job
at this moment? Yeah, and he's done an absolutely brilliant job since they've come back up. And I think what you look for in a coach is not just togetherness and organisation, because you expect that to a degree with promoted teams, but players who have shown promise before just playing so far above the level they have done anywhere else. You know, I think it's one of the things we talk about with Marcelo Bielsa, the fact that he unlocks parts of players' football brains that they didn't realise were there in the first place. And look at some of the players who are playing out of their skin. I think you look at Yangel Herrera in midfield, he's been absolutely terrific so far. Rui Silva, the goalkeeper, who I wouldn't be surprised to get called up for Portugal in a little while. And Álvaro Barillo as well, who has been absolutely brilliant for them. And that, I think, was quite a significant moment. The fact that he scored the winner against Betis, and he was Real Betis' youngest ever first team player at just 16 a couple of years back. And then he totally did his cruciate, not once but twice. From there he went on to Huesca, played a part in them getting promoted, but when they got promoted they binned him. He ended up at Granada, played a part in Granada getting promoted, and now he's got another crack at the top flight. Scored against Barcelona at Los Cardamines when they beat them, scored a very tidy goal at the weekend. He's someone who's really exciting to watch when he's got the ball at his feet. It gives them a little bit more cut and thrust in a team that is generally full of quite hard workers. It gives them that little bit of extra flair. And so, obviously, when he scored this goal against Betis, he didn't celebrate. And it's one of those players not celebrating against a former club, which I'm prepared to take. Okay. I think a lot of them. We're not talking about Scott Sinclair not celebrating against Chelsea.
You're giving him a pass.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know,
I don't think Oxlade Chamberlain celebrated against Liverpool last night either.
Against Arsenal?
Against Arsenal. Yeah, he held his hands up.
Did he?
Yeah.
Didn't he?
He did. And shout out to Roberto. By the way, shout out to Roberto Soldado, who's plying his trade at Granada as well at the moment.
Yeah, and he's not always been starting.
34 years young.
Such a good squad guy. Exemplary work ethic. The other thing we have to say off the back of Granada beating Betis is it meant that Rubi, the new coach of Betis, was in a bit of trouble. Now, in this round of midweek fixtures, they beat Celta with a late goal by Nabil Fekir. And Fekir, who's had a kind of fitful time since he's arrived in Spain, could basically have saved his coach's job with that. And probably signed off on Fran Escribar at Celta, who's probably been fired while we're recording this podcast.
Well, we'll see. Fingers crossed for him to keep his job. We don't see people losing their jobs unless...
I don't think Celta fans are in the same boat as you there.
Well, I was going to say, unless
they're not crossing their fingers that he keeps his job.
There'll be about 4 Serie A coaches been fired while we're in the studio as well. Yeah. But
it's a given.
Let's do Sevilla and Atletico Madrid then. You were pretty keen to do that. I mean, James, you can come on this as well. What's the angle here? What do you want to talk about particularly?
I think what's the interesting thing to talk about is here are two teams who've undergone such profound change, and we've looked at it from the Atletico perspective mainly because, you know, you've been able to, those Atletico mainstays have just tripped off the tongue, haven't they, in recent years. But now they're bedding down so many new starters and they're clearly going through a personality crisis. They're trying to play better football, and you look at the goal which they scored through Alvaro Morata, and it's, in my opinion, so much easier for them to play good football when Morata is in the team. And he's also the cutting edge that they're lacking when he's not there. I think you could argue that Morata is going to become their most important forward player. I understand Joao Felix is injured at the moment, but their most important striker, certainly. It was a lead that they didn't manage to hold on to, because sometimes they retreat into being the lumpy old Atletico, but they can't grind out games quite as they did before. And I understand in the game against Alaves, it was an absolutely tremendous equaliser by Lucas Perez, who obviously didn't have a wonderful time over here in England. And, you know, sometimes there's nothing you can do about that. But that they still aren't clinical enough to finish off games. They're drawing too many games. Now, I understand they're going through this spell of transition, but with what Barcelona are going through, not since Leo Messi came back, obviously, and what Real Madrid have been going through, it does kind of feel a bit like Dortmund. It's almost a missed opportunity.
Well, I think we have this discussion about Atletico Madrid every year, that Diego Simeone goes into the season saying, look, I want to play more expansive football. We're going to try and be, not better to watch, but more entertaining, be more expansive. And ultimately, they just regress back to what gets them results all the time. I mean, just to pull another thread on this and go back to what you were saying about Morata, I'm really pleased that he's actually seems to be doing well now. I mean, he scored in, what, three consecutive games. He's come up big for them, particularly in the Leverkusen game in the Champions League, where, again, I watched them and against the Leverkusen side that have been pretty disappointing in the Champions League, having lost to Lokomotiv in match day one, very poor against Juventus in match day two. Again, Atleti just really kind of...
That was an awful game.
It was an awful game. They found it very difficult to break down a very open and flaky team, in my opinion. But, you know, Morata, as you say, Andy, in terms of him making Atletico play better, I always remember when he was at Juventus and Allegri used to rave about Morata. And the reason he did was because this guy can play with any striker in any configuration up front. You know, if you play him out wide in a 4-3-3, he'll make sure that you get into the box and he supports the centre forward. If you play him in a two, he's a great partner, as he was for Carlos Tevez. He can play on his own up front. And that was the reason why... And that got lost very quickly at Chelsea. And I would even say in his first season back at first season with Atletico back in Spain with Atletico. So you know, I think it's good to see a player who, in my opinion, is a very good striker get back to what we kind of saw with him at Juventus and in that second spell back at Real Madrid.
But don't you feel, James, that there's so much more to come with him? Because for me, he's a fascinating striker because he has got the quality to be that link man and to get involved with a team that plays good football. On the other hand, he's also a shortcut to joy because if Trippier or Lodi throw it in the penalty box, he can win the headers and score at front or back post. And in fact, that's what glossed over a lot of his early travails at Chelsea, the fact that he was scoring goals because every time Chelsea got a cross in the box, he could make the most of it. And I think people saw that and said, look at him. He's born to the English game.
He went for that phase of scoring quite a few headers and that's what people were saying.
But really, in terms of the amount of games he's started, he's almost at the start, really, still a little bit. He's not been at a club where he's started 40, 50 games a season. So it'd be interesting to see how it goes on from that. But I know you wanted to take it on to Sevilla as well.
Well, before you do that, just shout out that game, Atletico drawing 1-1 against Alaves.
Yes.
Because I thought up until that point that the only player that had an airport named after him or was named after an airport was George Best, obviously in Belfast. But step forward, Vicente LaGuardia. who plays at the back for Alaves. If you know of any other players who've got the same name as an airport, let us know. OTC@footballramble.com.
Don't you think it's a curious thing that in Britain we're not really into naming airports, give or take like John Lennon and Robin Hood?
Isn't Robin Hood Nottingham Airport? Is it? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, I think I did know
because,
that.
Because, you know, it's something that's very prevalent in the rest of the world. What footballers could we name? I mean, I think we could have like Stansted being like Trevor Brooking International or something, couldn't we?
In the US, they love it. Obviously, Charles de Gaulle in Paris.
Yeah.
You got, I think George Bush has got an airport named after him over in the US.
Marco Polo in Venice.
Yeah.
Fiumicino also goes by the Leonardo da Vinci Airport, but it's a little bit like San Siro and the Giuseppe Meazza. Most people just say San Siro. So.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good one. I don't know why we don't do it more of it in the UK, really. But what can you do? JFK, the famous one, the big swinger. Anyway, sorry, what were you saying? Sevilla and Lopetegui.
Because, you know, we've talked so much about the turnover at...
Incongruously, and I remember this because I've flown from here before.
Here we go, he's still on this one, mate, sorry.
I wanted to correct you. Robin Hood Airport is not Nottingham Airport. It's not even East Midlands, it's the Doncaster.
It's Donny,
Airport.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
So there you go.
Apologies.
Because Robin Hood, of course, you know, stole from the rich and robbed... For the poor,
yeah,
in kind of West Yorkshire, kind of West South Yorkshire, kind of Donny kind of area. That was very much the Sheriff of Doncaster not happy with what Robin Hood was
doing.
And
you are very much Robin from the poor with the fee you charge for this episode. So. The opposite of Robin Hood, giving it to more rich people.
More rich people. See?
Andy, Sevilla, Lopetegui, has he got an airport named after him or not? And is he likely to have one?
Not yet, but who knows?
Yeah.
Because he is... tentatively rebuilding his reputation as a club coach, I would say. We talk about the challenges for Atletico this season and the turnover of players, but that's overshadowed, I think, the extraordinary turnover since Monchi's arrived back at Sevilla. I mean, you look at the team that started at Valencia last night. Seven starters were newly signed this summer. I mean, that is really...
So he's embedded them in very nicely.
That is really difficult to bed in, but they've got a personality already. You know, no one's saying they're the best team in the league or they're a title challenger or anything like that. I think they're actually quite unlucky not to grind out a win at Valencia in the end, and God knows Valencia love a draw. But I think, especially in the first half, you saw where Lucas Ocampos gave them the lead. You look at players like Ocampos, Juan Jordan... They're really industrious. They're players who, I think you look at Sevilla's signings compared to other summers, and I think I've said this elsewhere, they don't look especially sexy. But the amount of work that those guys get through, and Ocampos, for me, he made his reputation in that last year at Marseille because he was a player who obviously came over from Argentina to France when he was a teenager for a lot of money, didn't quite get it going at Monaco, and almost... like Eric Lamella in a different way. I don't think they're strictly comparable players, but Ocampos has turned out to be, like Lamella, a totally different player to what people imagined of him when he was such a highly prized teenager. The amount of work that you get out of Ocampos, he can help create a culture. He can help create a character in the team.
He can do Chicharito's running for him.
Yeah, exactly. Come on, he loves a run behind. It's just a different type of running. Yeah. And, you know, I think to have a guy like that leading from the front really helps. He's been a big signing for them. But yeah, lots of credit to Lopetegui, who is bedding in so many new
and
players.
And obviously, Jesus Navas is playing right back for him now, isn't he, as well?
Yeah, that's a given now.
Yeah. All right, we have to move on because we've run out of time. Games of the week.
You remembered.
I forgot to do it last week. Apologies. I did all the admin. I didn't even get to do the glorious bit at the end to talk about it. So I apologise to everyone who had no idea what game to watch last weekend because I didn't fulfil my admin brief. But I'm going to do it this week, and I'm going to start by saying Dortmund-Wolfsburg for me. Wolfsburg haven't beaten Dortmund for a while, but they're undefeated in the league. And you've mentioned a bit about Dortmund's issues.
They are, but so they had their asses kicked in the DFB Pokal this week. They were 6-1
to Leipzig, wasn't it?
Leipzig,
yeah.
And Dortmund, who's starting a very difficult mini run, they came back from a goal down with a couple of late Julian Brandt goals to beat Gladbach. And that is really big for Lucien Favre. Few people questioning him recently, as I said, in my Guardian column this week. Mm. And after Gladbach, of course, they have unbeaten Wolfsburg, as you say. Then the return with Inter in San Siro. And then...
No, it's at Signal Iduna Park, no?
Oh yeah, of course it is. Ziegler-Iduna Park. Yeah. I was just trying to move away from Giuseppe Meazza. And then after they play that return with Inter, they've got Bayern away. So those are four very tough games.
So you can watch that at 2:30 on Saturday, Dortmund-Wolfsburg. It'll be a fascinating encounter. And then Andy Brassel, with the old 1-2, hit him with the old razzle-dazzle because you are going to the Berlin Derby and that's at 5:30 that day?
Union versus Hertha and it will be on BT Sport. Watch it. It's going to be incredible. And turn it on 10 minutes early so you get a bit of the atmosphere.
Yeah. It's a no-brainer, isn't it, to watch? It's
first time the pair of them have met in top flight. It's going to be incredible.
Great. So check out that on Saturday evening on BT Sport. James, you are going to be attending the Turin Derby, but you told me earlier, off the record, but I'm going to break a trust and say you think it's going to be boring. So you're choosing Roma-Napoli, is that right?
Yeah.
Tell us why, very quickly.
It has the potential to be a cracking game. Roma, in adversity... this team, you just can't keep them down.
They won 4-0 away last week.
4-0 away at the weekend, in midweek against Udinese when they were down to 10 men for much of that game. Felt like a real kind of character-building performance, and this team does have exactly that. I mean, we saw them winning stoppage time against Bologna. They were really unlucky last Thursday in the Europa League where, again, with essentially... 20 players out injured, they managed to be 1-0 up going into stoppage time against the Bundesliga leaders, Gladbach, only for Willy Colham, the Scottish referee, to invent a penalty kick.
We talked all about him. Chris Smalling's face, Willy Colham, had everything you need for a ramble trope, that did. Chris Smalling got his first goal, did you just mention that?
Smalling got his first goal in Udine, has done very well. There's already talk of Roma looking to sign him on a permanent basis because at the moment it's just a loan from Manchester United.
How are they getting on with the fact that he's a vegan? Are they dealing with that?
Yeah. I mean, there's lots of opportunities for good... good vegan eating, I would say, in the Italian cookery book.
Right.
It's just not something that you'd necessarily associate with it being, you know, such a gluten-heavy pizza pasta kind of...
Cheese-heavy.
Yeah. But no, he's done very well. Zaniolo scored in his last three games after being sort of singled out for criticism from Fabio Capello, which he's since kind of... walked back on. But then Napoli, who, again, played excellent football for half an hour in midweek against Atalanta, really showed what they're kind of capable of. But again, just dropping points. And they find themselves sixth. They're behind. Roma actually leapfrogged them in midweek. So they need to win this, really, to not so much kind of stay in conversation for Champions League, but this is a team that basically said second is no longer enough.
Yeah.
For us, we have to win something. So they're definitely going to have to win this game, which will be at the Olympico on 2:00 on Saturday.
Yeah, check it out. Don't miss it. That's all from us this week. Tomorrow is the preview show with me, Jim, Marcus and Pete, of course. And Saturday will be another Blizzard Greatest Games. If you want to come see us live, you're going to have to get a shift on. We're in Norwich tonight, Birmingham tomorrow, and Manchester Saturday. Then we go to the US and Canada. RambleLive.com for tickets. Have a lovely rest of your Thursday. Cheers, guys.
You know, when you put your finger up like that, I thought he's got an incredible joke that he's going to end it with. It's very disappointing that he didn't.
It's more like a RuPaul thing. Sashay away.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.